Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky of Break of Day Capital. I talk to leading experts to discuss a wide range of subjects to educate investors on best-in-class practices to build legacy wealth and positively impact communities. Let's jump in. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky with Break of Day Capital. Be sure to join our Facebook group, Asset Management Mastery, where we have a great community of thousands of like-minded individuals sharing resources and best practices.
Choosing the right insurance coverage for multifamily properties isn't that complicated, if you know who to talk to. At the Garzella Group, we're uniquely qualified to help you navigate the range of policy choices you have, and we're committed to saving you 30% in the process. We do intensive market research and have nationwide relationships, so we can find coverage other insurance brokers simply can't. We should talk. Go to quotenow.biz and we'll start the conversation.
Today on the podcast, I have Todd Dexheimer, who's returning. Todd is the principal of Enduris Capital and VitaCare Living, and he started investing in 2008. His companies have bought and sold over $500 million in multifamily, senior housing, and commercial real estate. And today he focuses on operating value-add commercial real estate in the Midwest. Thanks for joining us, Todd. Can you start by telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. A little bit about myself. Well, my wife and two kids live in Minnesota. Been here basically my whole life, so you know, love the outdoors and love having a lot of fun with the kids and being super active. My company, as you said, Enduris Capital, VitaCare Living. So our niche, our bread and butter is value add real estate. And it's really focused on multifamily, mainly multifamily. We do have some other assets or some retail, some industrial assisted living. So, but our main bread and butter is multifamily.
People ask me all the time about getting involved in other asset classes. I'm curious, When did you start looking into this senior housing and commercial, and why has your focus been on multifamily?
Yeah. So to give you a little bit more of a background, I started flipping houses. My goal, when I first started this journey was to buy a bunch of apartment buildings. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I don't have money. Like, how am I going to do that? So I started buying like some single family homes and really quickly realized I don't have money to do that either. Like, ran out of money. So then I started flipping houses, and I would take those profits, and for every, you know, it wasn't a science, but for every about three flips I did, I would buy another single family home or a duplex or a triplex, something smaller to keep for the rental portfolio. And I did that for many years, built a portfolio up to about 100 properties, and also did a few other things too within that. So I did some full development, did some land trades, bought a ski resort at one time, little tiny ski resort in Minnesota. So nothing impressive. We're not talking Colorado here. People are like, tell me about the ski resort. I'm like, well, you know, we bought it for $450,000. So it's not really what you're thinking, you know, mobile home park. So anyways, that whole time there that I'm doing a lot of very transactional. I'm like, what is working? Right. Cause doing a lot of transactions is great. It kind of vibes with me because I like to move. I like to go fast. But at the same time, you want to do it purposefully. And so I'm looking and saying, hey, what's working, what's not? And the rentals made a ton of sense. And so the multifamily, the bigger the multifamily that I had, the more it made sense. And so that's when I started to transition out of the flipping game and into the multifamily game. And I started buying, you know, 10, 20 unit buildings, honestly, until a mentor of mine was like, I said to him one day, Gary, we were talking about a mutual friend. I said, man, I want to do what he does. I'll just call him Jim. I want to do what Jim does. I want to buy these 200 unit buildings like he did. And my mentor is like, so why aren't you? Well, you know, I got to take baby steps. I got to get there. I don't know if I said exactly like that, but I, you know, basically like, hey, I'm chicken. Right? I'm not there yet. I got to graduate. And he's like, you know, Jim's no smarter than you. You've been in this industry for longer than him, blah, blah, blah. He's like, if you want to go buy a 200 unit, go buy one. And I went, okay. And so within a couple months of that, I had a 84 unit and then 120 unit under contract. and was off to the races and started buying multifamily, and it's worked really well since. So yeah, I guess you asked why multifamily, and so I still haven't even answered your question. It made sense, right? The demographics make sense. You see that we have a shortage of housing, especially when I first started in the multifamily, and it was comfortable. Honestly, that was probably the biggest thing. It was really familiar. I understood it. And so it made sense to me. It was easy to understand.
Your journey is pretty similar to mine. My first house in 2002 was like, I was a stunning neighborhood, and that was for my family, but it wasn't like our parents and so many older people in that generation was like their forever home. My parents are still in the home over 50 years.
Yeah.
I was looking at a value add, trying to make, you know, nothing down. I was in debt, got a house, opened it up and converted the garage to an office and got some money. But yeah, started small and thinking small too, until the other people were like, well, if you partner with others, you don't have to build up this long resume of like four houses and an aplex and a tenplex and just partner with others.
Right. Right. It's funny because I was thinking small yet thinking big, right? Because I'm doing a ton of properties. I'm buying and selling, you know, 50 properties a year, right? 40, 50 properties a year. So I'm doing big things, but I'm doing small things, you know, at the same time. So it was a weird transition. I tell you what, like when I went from buying that many deals in a year to all of a sudden buying like 2 to 3 deals in a year, it was difficult for me. Like it was really challenging. I felt like a loser. I felt defeated by not doing deals. That was probably my biggest challenge, is going from doing, you know, when you're doing transaction after transaction, and you're doing 2-3 a month, and all of a sudden you do 2-3 a year. For me, I felt like I'm failing here. Yet I'm making more money. My business is growing. All the things that on paper looked good, but my brain said, man, you're a loser. You're not doing anything.
I appreciate your vulnerability.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever told anybody that, but other than my mentor and my wife, right? I'm like, dude, I just feel like such a loser right now. Like I feel like I'm doing nothing.
But yeah, you probably had a lot less payroll, making a lot more money, having more free time probably, because that economies of scale is so, so powerful.
Yeah, 100%. And my brain wasn't going berserk because I wasn't doing a million things at the same time and trying to do it all myself. When I transitioned, and I didn't shut the lights off right on the flipping. It took me, I had projects going on still, and I maybe bought a couple, but when I transitioned, I went from really not having great systems down to really focusing and implementing on my systems, because I was buying properties out of state. And so I had to truly get my systems down. I had to get other people involved. And so that was another big difference. Not only was I doing less volume of transactions, but I was actually relying on more people to be involved in the project's success.
Yeah. A lot of people jump into this business, particularly in the last like 7 years where it's been easier money, not chasing deals and not building systems and not realizing this is a legitimate business. Like you've got to have those systems in place. You've got to invest in your education. You've got to invest in your team. And why a lot of these younger people that have jumped in of late are struggling big time.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, my podcast, try to really talk about why you're successful and how you're successful in business. Because so many people, I think, get into this real estate investing and they think it's real estate investing. They think it's passive and they think they're just need to buy deals and that's it. And they don't understand what I really love about you. You know, you wrote a great book and you've got the Facebook and you talk about the asset management portion. You're talking about getting your hands dirty and building the business. And that's what it's really all about. I mean, like, look, anybody can go buy crap, but you have to understand, like, if you want to be passive, invest in a syndication. If you're like, hey, I'm going to go buy real estate and I'm going to be passive and I want to, and your idea is you're sitting on the beach drinking Mai Tais, then you need to invest in a syndication. You need to invest passively. you are running a business. Every single apartment building is its own business and they stack upon each other. And even a single family home, by the way, is a business. It's just, it's a really small business, but it's a business, right? And you have to treat it as such. Otherwise, you're just going to fail or you're going to be miserable. Like you hear the three T's, the tenants, the toilets, the trash, or termites, or whatever you want to call your three T's. I mean, it's because people suck at running businesses because they didn't think they were actually buying a business. They thought they were buying a real estate investment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we know a lot of people that are buying single family homes, duplexes, you know, fourplexes, and, you know, to create passive income. Mm-hmm. And their margins are horrible. If they are making money, it's a lot of work, and they'd be much better served by investing, you know, with one of our companies that have a team of experts that do this full time, that spend tons and tons of time and doing market research and focusing on a few markets. And they're just, I've got a house here and a house there and a house, like all spread out. And it's insane. And I tell people, like, that's not how you create passive income. And that's not how you run a business.
Yeah, absolutely. I love telling stories about it and showing people real examples. And it's just amazing. It's not passive. That's
I saw on your media kit sheet that you're able to get about 95% of your investors to commit. How do you do that?
Yeah. So there's a couple of reasons we're able to get. So it's not 95% of our investors commit. It's when they commit, they're in. Right. So we have our investor list. And of course, there's people that don't invest for whatever reason. The deal is not the right fit for them, or their kids are graduating high school and going into college, or you know, whatever it is, or building a dream house, whatever it might be. Right. So, but when somebody says they're going to invest with us, they're going to invest with us. And here's what we do up front. And I think a lot of people do a couple of these steps, but I think most people don't hit them all. And so, first of all, it's about education, right? So we provide education. So it's going on a podcast, it's having our own podcast, it's providing a newsletter, it's making sure that our investors understand what multifamily syndication is, understand the asset classes, understand what we're going to be sending to them. So when we have our first interaction with an investor, they get an email from us. And that email has sample deals. It has a big Q&A, and that's been created. That Q&A has been created over the years of just investor questions that have been asked to us. And we're like, okay, well, let's start writing these things down, right? So it's just providing them like more information than what they need, but a ton of information. So it starts with the education and then the communication, right? We're just very consistently communicating with our investors. We want to make sure that we answer questions, we get in front of them and head those eyes. So I think that's number one. Education and communication are so important. I think a lot of people miss on the communication, especially. That is huge. So let's talk about when we actually have a deal and we put it in front of our investors. So here's the difference that I think we do that a lot of other people don't do. And I can see people saying, well, I like it my way. That's fine. I like it my way, right? So when we have a deal, we send it to our investors and we're very clear with them that we set the expectations up that if you say you're in the deal, you're in the deal. So we don't have this big soft commit and, hey, if you change your mind, it's okay. I don't believe it. This is my personal opinion. Okay. So shoot me for it. If you don't like it, that's fine. But my personal opinion is make a decision and stick with it. And the people that make decisions and stick with them are successful. The people that are wishy-washy and make decisions and then back out of decisions aren't successful. I want committed people that are successful. And so that's how I'm going to run my business. If you want to invest in my deal, tell me you're going to invest and then invest. Don't back out because I don't want people that aren't committed. So that's how I operate. And that's why people invest in my deal. I don't have a soft commitment. Okay. There's no time frame for a soft commitment. It is put your investment in right now or put your commitment in right now. And it's a hard commitment. I expect you to invest, right? If you have questions, ask questions, certainly. And I understand there is times where you might have to back out, but that very rarely happens for us. So that's the expectation. We don't do soft commitments. when you do make a commitment into the deal, so, you know, we do the webinar and all that kind of stuff, and it's just somebody makes a commitment, then again, it's about communication. It's about telling them where we are on the timeline. Due diligence is completed. Nothing came up, whatever. Something came up, whatever it is. Here's where we're at. Here's the closing timeline. A PPM, here it is. All that kind of stuff. So we're communicating with them. We're communicating with them weekly so they know exactly what's happening on the timeline. So they're not confused. We don't want confused investors. Early on, I had an investor. This was a long time ago. This is before I was doing syndications. And I had an investor. They said they were going to invest in a deal. Okay. With me, and I assumed they were going to invest in the deal, right? It was like a $200,000 deal or $200,000 that they're going to invest. We get, and I don't communicate with them, right? So they said they're going to commit the money. I said, okay, great. I don't communicate with them. And it's like a few days before closing, I'm like, hey, we're going to close here, whatever, March 2nd. You ready? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm out. Right. I'm like, what? That's my fault. Cause I wasn't communicating with them. Like they would have easily told me they're not out, or maybe they like, he's just like, I thought that deal was dead. Right. Cause I never talked to him again. And I'm like, oh man. So I haven't made that mistake again. It's just communicate. I don't believe you can over communicate with people. I think it's really hard to do. I like it when I know how much money I need to raise. I want to know that I got that money. Right. If I got $5 million in commitments, I'm literally going to close on probably 4.95 million of those.
Setting up those expectations from the beginning and obviously communicating consistently, setting the right expectations to your investors because they feel they're getting too many emails. They could just not read it. I mean, so many of my investors actually don't read a lot of the emails.
100%.
My usual investors on our team, we have to call them and say, hey, we've got a deal, you know, like, because they see our cadence, they see our information, and we provide plenty of it. And that's why we avoid, you know, knock on wood, no, we don't have any investor problems because they know exactly what's going on. And we vetted them from the beginning. And I'm sure, you have the exact same thing because you've had these conversations. They know what they're getting into. We're not trying to convert people that haven't heard about syndication before without educating before they invest.
And that's the other thing too, is we won't let somebody invest. We need to know and understand that they truly understand what's going on here. So if this is the first time they've heard of a syndication, maybe we had an introductory call 2 weeks before this deal came live. Like, sorry, you know, next one is an opportunity, not this one. Unless they truly know what's going on, right? But if it's like, you know what, we just had to talk about syndication. You didn't know what it was. You know, you haven't invested in real estate. Like, sorry, but you're going to have to watch what's going on for a little while before you can invest.
I love it. So many people out there would just be like, convince people to invest. It could be their last money that they have, or they have no idea that it's illiquid and all these different things just because they're just massive hunters. And that's not the way to go.
We are striving to do a better job at pre-vetting investors. And one of the reasons here's why it happened is, so I had a lady who invested in three deals of ours. I think it was like 50 to 75 in each deal, and didn't do the best job in vetting that person. They're going to invest in three deals. I figure they have the money, right? And so what ended up happening though is this person calls me not very long after, you know, let's call it 2 years after, but still the deals were longer deals. Actually, two of them were 10-year holds. So long deals. And she says, hey, when's this money coming back? I'm going to retire and I need that money to retire. And I'm like, these two are 10-year holds. Like, so we got 8 more years left before you get your money back. We'd like to refinance, but we didn't underwrite refinancing. Now interest rates are really high. So I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. And, you know, this other one's a 5-year hold. So we still got 3 years left, you know, and markets change. So it could be 6 or 7 years. So again, that comes back to us. Like, we didn't ask the right questions. Otherwise I would have said, no, you can't invest that money. Or, hey, maybe it's just one deal you invest in, not three. Leave that other money liquid, you know? So I think it's really important that you understand who your investors are. So we're trying to figure out ways to do a better job at understanding who our investors are and why they're investing and what they need the money for. Hey, I got a kid going to college in 6 years, and this is my entire kid's college fund. I want to invest in your deal. Well, wait a second. No, like, I don't think that's a good idea. We can't allow you to do that, right? Well, let's understand what's going on.
No, I love it. I love it. Not enough people are doing that. Okay, you threw it out there earlier. I got a bite. You know, why did you buy a ski resort?
Actually, so my former business partner in a flipping business, he was deer hunting on the property next door and ended up like seeing this property, and all the deer trails went through this property, and it's got ski lifts and stuff, and he's in this big lodge. And so he goes and talks to the owner, and the owner's like, hey, you know what? Yeah, we have to sell. Like, literally the other day, I was taking my mom to the doctor, and we drove by this old decrepit barn, and she said, son, like, this is going to be our property soon. And so we ended up negotiating with them, got the deal for $450,000. We got 100% bank financing. This isn't like 2012, right? So the storm was still happening. Like, banks were still really nervous at that time, like foreclosure city, right? We got 100% bank financing. They financed the entire thing because it appraised for $950,000. Okay. We ended up redoing the roof and doing some other minor work. And I actually tried to convince my wife to move down. There's a gorgeous piece of property. I think it was 182 acres. It had a very beautiful trout stream running through it. Gorgeous hunting ground for deer, turkey. And then it had the, you know, ski bumps. We're in Minnesota, so they're not mountains, but it had the little ski hills. And then it had this 8,000 square foot lodge. She said, no way, we're not doing that. And so we ended up selling it, sold it to a guy, and he actually turned it into a wedding and event center and opened up downhill skiing this year. So back to a ski resort with weddings and events too.
So I got to ask, how well did you do on that deal?
Yeah, we sold it for, I think it was right around that 950 mark. It was 900 plus. So pretty well.
Zero money down, and you came close to doubling your money.
Yeah. Yeah, not a bad deal. Take
it. Sounds good. Yeah.
I wish those deals were falling out of the sky right now.
Yep. Yeah. Well, hopefully some trickle down our way. You know, not a tsunami, but hey, we'll take one or two or three, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing is, like, these types of deals happen if you're paying attention. Eyes wide open, pay attention, understand, and ask, right? There's another deal that just off the top of my head pops up. I didn't buy it, but I drove through there every day, like every day. And I saw the property. Every day that I saw the property, I kept on saying, I got to contact the owner. I got to contact the owner. Never contact the owner. One of my friends bought the property and then sold it and made $300,000-$400,000 on it. Like, didn't do anything to it. Just bought it, cleaned it up a little bit. Literally, it was a vacant piece of property. Bought it, cleaned it up, and sold it. So,
got to do it. That's our voices deep inside telling us what to do. Right. Well, Todd, it was awesome having you on. Appreciate your expertise. Where can listeners find out more about you and your company?
Yeah. So, EnduriceCapital.com, Todd at EnduriceCapital.com. If you want to talk to me about investing or really just anything real estate related, happy to, you know, jump on a call. So shoot me an email or connect with us at our website. And I also have a podcast as well called Pillars of Wealth Creation. So I know, Gary, you're going to be on there, and I don't know when this comes out, but you'll be on there soon. Listeners, check that out as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks again, Todd. This is Gary Lipsky signing off. I'll be back next week with another informative episode on the Real Estate Investor Podcast.
To all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. And if you like this episode, please head over to iTunes or Stitcher and like, subscribe, and leave a review, as it will help us reach more people. And if you'd like to learn more about what we do at Break of Day Capital, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com and sign up for our newsletter and fill out our investor application. We'll talk to you next week.